Today's program is brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 131 of The Morning After. I am your co-host, Sari Kamen. My lovely co-host, Jesse Kiefer, is not in studio today, but as always, she is in our hearts and our thoughts and all sorts of other places that will not be mentioned. You guys are gross. I didn't mean it like that. Okay, today in studio, we are so lucky. We have Alan Katz. He is the co-founder of New York Distilling Company, as well as being the vice president, product development, and brand ambassador of New York Distilling Company. He is also the director of the Spirits Education and Mixology for Southern Wine and Spirits of New York, as well as the host of The Cocktail Hour, a weekly program on Sirius Radio, and he is the former chairman of Slow Food USA. Alan Katz, welcome to The Morning After.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome. You have a very long introduction.
I can't remember all of that.
It's okay. I'll remind you later.
Because I think it's all true.
I guess I didn't fact check any of it.
Yeah.
But I have been to the New York Distilling Company, and I have tasted some of your spirits. So as far as I know, you speak the truth. First, we're going to bring some food news to you, as we always do. The latest in breaking. I know we talk a lot about fast food on this show, especially coming from Asia, and that's because they never fail to disappoint us with their incredible innovations. So a couple of new breaking news in that genre. We brought you news from Japan recently about their latest burger, which was an all-black burger. And so they have now launched their newest. It is a cheese-drenched fondue burger. So it's like their regular hamburger or chicken sandwich, but they're now calling it a beef fondue or a chicken fondue sandwich. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the pictures, and I got to say, it does not look good.
I don't think I'm going to Google that one.
You don't want to Google that one? Because I don't think they can keep the fondue warm, like in a fast food situation. So you just get this container with this like half melted cheese that you're supposed to dip your burgers in.
Dipping niblets.
That would be okay, but I don't know, like the whole burger doesn't fit. It's just, some things are meant for fondue, some things were born to be dipped in cheese.
This looks disgusting.
Yeah, and I would say in most situations, like, dip it in cheese. Yeah, that's a good idea, but in this case, I guess not so much. And then also, coming from Australia, Pizza Hut apparently has launched a new pizza, and their crust is made out of Doritos.
So, wow, that's innovation.
That is innovation. They're following, I guess, Taco Bell's lead with their whatever they do, like their Dorito
These
shells.
Billion-dollar ideas.
It's amazing. And they must have like massive think tanks set up around the world. So we did mention to you a couple weeks ago that the Meow Parlor, New York's first cat cafe, is opening soon. And as we are, you know, the official source of where to find out your cat cafe information here at The Morning After, we have some updates. Very excited to tell you it will open on December 15th. So start getting ready. It's going to be in the Lower East Side, I guess, on Hester Street. And they are currently hiring. So if anyone is looking for a really cool job and they like cats and they also like cafes, this might be a really great opportunity. There are some stipulations. I guess you have to have had experience with cats. You have to sign a waiver before playing with the cats. They're going to be taking online reservations for cat time. And rates for adults and children over 10 are $4 per half hour. Children under 10 are allowed with a chaperone at a rate of $12 per hour. So that's sounding really exciting.
Are you enthusiastic about this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to play that way then. I think it sounds great.
Why not?
As Mr. Katz,
as someone
I fully
who
endorse
Katz.
The Cat Cafe.
Oh, that's funny. That's really good. And that reminds me, at the end of the show today, we're actually going to have a quiz for you, the Morning After quiz, which is going to be the least sensical yet most difficult quiz you've ever taken in your life. But we're not going to tell you any more about that right now. And then this is sort of up your alley, Alan. The final news tidbit or nugget of today is that in Dublin, which is in Ireland, last time I checked.
Or Ohio.
That's true. Five thieves managed to steal a boatload of liquor. And most of it was Jameson. So I don't know how you feel about that. Apparently,
well, I was going to ask, was it quality alcohol?
Well,
that's a fine whiskey.
It was 2,580 cases of Jameson, which is a lot. Just in case you guys aren't good at math. And then also some cases of Bombay Sapphire and then several cases of Jack Daniels. So, but what's impressive about this, it was only five guys who pulled off this heist. And they entered the warehouse and I think all they had were like some iron bars because that's how you get shit done in Ireland.
It must be. I mean, is there no security tape on this?
Apparently there was.
Okay.
Yeah. And they were like, yep, they pulled up in two vans. There's the vans. If anyone has any information, let us know. So we here at The Morning After are, echoing their cries. If you have any information, be sure to tweet us at TMA on HRN and visit our Facebook page, The Morning After on Heritage Radio. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Alan Katz.
We made a little coin, built a time machine and picked up Mr. Boynes.
Everybody's having fun, and we only just begun. We gonna party till the morning come. We gonna party till the morning come.
And you're listening to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. I am your host today, Sari Kamen. I am co-host-less. Jesse Kiefer is not in studio. And that's something that we feel sad about. Okay, so luckily, I do have someone wonderful in studio to help me forget my sadness. I have Alan Katz. If you're just tuning in, he's the co-founder of New York Distilling Company, as well as the director of spirits education and mixology for Southern Wine and Spirits of New York. And he has his own radio show, The Cocktail Hour, which I'm assuming, Alan, you talk about cocktails for an hour.
We have done that in the past, yes.
Do you continue to do it?
Well, I've run out of time to do all these things, to be honest.
I was wondering about that.
The radio show at this point is sporadic, not a regular endeavor. But for about 5 years, it was a great pleasure every Friday to end the day with a live show. People would call in and ask their cocktail questions. We would do cocktails for weddings and other events and generally have a good time.
That sounds really fun. But you have so many different jobs. Which is your most job of all the jobs?
I don't have one that's the most. That's the great, for me, brilliant thing about it is you wake up and see not necessarily what the priorities are for the day, but what the interests are. Obviously, there's some things that have to get done. But my passion for at least the last dozen years was starting this distillery and to see it in its fruition and get it off the ground and get some products out into the local market and out into the world has been a great deal of fun.
Yeah. So can you tell us more about that? I mean, there is an actual location that you distill
there
spirits.
There is. And there are many ways to bring an alcoholic beverage to market, if you will. But we're prideful. Our excitement is that we actually make the stuff. Our name is the New York Distilling Company.
And where are you located?
We're in Brooklyn, here in Williamsburg.
Great.
And we have a 5,000 square foot plant, increasingly surrounded by apartment buildings as the neighborhood continues to evolve. And as I said, we opened live to the public 3 years ago, exactly. And we invested in an actual still. It's a 1,000-liter kettle with a related column. So it's a bit of a contemporary hybrid still. And we went to work developing recipes for gins and rye whiskeys, two authentic classic cocktail spirits.
Okay, so tell us a little about what so far you have in production.
Sure. For the last several years, we've been focusing on producing and selling gins because, in truth, they don't take a long time to to produce, to distill, and bottle. And so we have Dorothy Parker. We call it American gin, not to create some kind of category, but just to say, hey, this is a little bit different. This is not your typical English gin. And we love it. It's very versatile and fun to mix in cocktails. And we have a bit of a throwback, a Navy-strength gin called Perry's Tot, after Commodore Perry, who's was the first commandant of all things at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And this is potent stuff. It's 57% alcohol.
There is that what Navy strength means?
It was traditionally. And the idea was that if by accident or otherwise you spilled your gin on gunpowder, you could still fire off your cannons on board ship.
Oh, that's so funny. I always thought it meant like, it has to be stronger for guys in the Navy.
Yeah, well, you
like
know,
they it, need almost like what's that term? Liquid courage.
Dutch courage.
Dutch courage.
Sure, sure.
Right.
Well, you know, that could be part of the story too. But in its origin, the British Royal Navy originally devised that they needed something strong enough, and after all, they paid their officers with booze. It was daily rations of gin in some cases, and also Navy strength rum. And we thought, hey, as a little company with a very small marketing budget, that this would be a way for us to sort of wave our hands in the air and say, hey, we exist. We're purposefully different. This is an interesting spirit. Yes, there's some education about it, but it's a fun story. And we think that it's, even at such high proof, reasonably smooth and mixes very well in cocktails. And that's our background. We're cocktail guys. So, you know, we're trying to make spirits that people can incorporate into mixed drinks.
And you do have this very kind of like American focus in terms of the products that you use, and a lot of them are local. Is that
we,
right?
We are American. Yes, yes. It is. I mean, we're celebrating American cocktail culture, international as well, but it's really an American historic focus. One of the later products that we developed in conjunction with a good friend and drinks historian Dave Wandrich is called Chief Gowanus New Netherland Gin, and we are in what was once New Netherland when the Dutch were the first Europeans to, so to speak, settle here. And they tried to bring their homeland spirit to these shores in present-day New York, which was Genever. And they couldn't quite muster the same ingredients that they found in Flemish countries. And so they looked around and said, well, we have an abundance of rye. And we've been making rye whiskey since the day we opened. We just haven't sold any up until now. So we've been letting it age and developing a couple of different recipes. And the Chief Gowanus was sort of the bridge to introducing some of our rye whiskey products. But it is a kissing cousin to Genever. It's our rye distillate redistilled with juniper berries and hops.
And it's that Genever, if I could be wrong here, but is that not where Dutch courage actually came from?
Absolutely, that's right. I mean, it's like, ooh, take a slug of this before you really go into battle.
Yeah.
But I don't know the success rate of that. Or it just knocked you out and said, well, whatever may come, be damned.
So talking to you is super fun because you're a historian. You're a culinary historian, a cocktail historian. And you also just are into making really fun drinks.
Well, that's the most important thing is the latter. Is we like making fun drinks. And
well, most people are kind of one or the other. I don't think there's many people like you who really kind of understand the background of where everything comes from. And you're so focused and you have so much regard, you know, for the stories behind how these grains have come to be developed into spirits.
Well, I appreciate it. But if part of that is if you're going to make things that take a little bit of outreach. You know, we want to offer our hands to people and say, hey, we can help you in a fun way. We're not going to tell you what to do or say you must do this or this is the only way. These are fun things. They're very versatile. And part of the enjoyment for us is in some ways we're creating original recipes for our own spirits that have historic reference. But once they're out in the real world, people with wonderful talent at bars and restaurants, and in some cases hotels as well, are coming up with amazing cocktails that we would never have thought of.
Yeah.
And to put these types of things in other people's hands and say, go wild, is really part of the enjoyment because at that point it's out of our hands. We just make the product.
Right. But it also just sort of coincidentally taps into this total zeitgeist that is happening now, where people are very into things that feel nostalgic.
Amen.
And I don't know if they have like the same kind of reverence for the actual histories. It seems to me more of like an aesthetic, but you actually have just always kind of been that way.
Well, I mean, I have, but I think a lot of people do have an appreciation for it. That's part of it. I mean, it really goes, you know, in this gastronomic arc that I believe is 40 years in the making, where as Americans, first we started to care about food. And in a New York sense, you know, there was the Green Market all of a sudden, where you could get reasonably local vegetables and cheese and other agricultural products. And then we became interested in wine, and then it was craft beer. And we're at this, in some ways, last culinary element of spirits and cocktails. And for me, part of the celebration is that there is such an amazing American history that is intertwined with cocktail history.
Right. And in fact, you actually said to me that it was cocktails and barbecue that are the only true sort of, I guess, pillars of American gastronomy.
Well, I call them American slow food.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of blew me away because I'd never thought of cocktails as part of like that sort of lexicon.
Well, we didn't create distilling here, that's for certain. I mean, mm-hmm. It goes back centuries. But the idea of mixing spirits, and it seems simplistic, but also mixing spirits with one key ingredient, and that's ice, is really the birthplace of contemporary cocktails.
We should feel really proud about that.
I am. Absolutely.
There's not many things that, like,
I just
Americans
got goosebumps.
Really Ooh. This is exciting. Okay, cool. So why don't you tell us about the New York Distilling Company? Has all the functionality of being an actual distilling company, but there's also a bar.
We do. Well, that was part of, you know, the wonderful nature of doing business in New York State. Is it's not that long ago, in the last 5-6 years, that New York State adapted some laws that are really favorable to small businesses who are interested in distilling. And one of them, if you're under a ceiling of volume of production, that you can obtain a license to have a tasting room, have a retail room, or should you be crazy enough, you can operate a bar. And that's my background also. And I said, you know what, this would be fun. Little did I know, but this would be fun, but it would also be very, very honestly, in my personality, more of our style of marketing. We're not hitting people over the head. Please drink our spirits, but okay. Hey, come to our bar. We've got 200 plus bottles there. A handful of them are ours, but most of them are other brands, some that people are very well familiar with, some that have been cultivated and brought to our attention that we just are very fond of and think that we can do fun things with. And in a vibrant and, I think equally important, affordable setting, say, hey, have some cocktails. Come drink with us a little bit. And if people like those drinks, the thought process on our end is that it stands to reason that we know what we're doing in the distillery, which is just through a bay window onto the manufacturing floor from our bar called the Shanty. And so it's a nice link to reinforce our effort to make spirits designed for cocktails.
Yeah, you kind of have like a built-in test group.
That's it, exactly.
Well, that's very smart of you.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can go to the bar and you don't have to drink the drinks that are made.
Have a beer if you like.
But
have
it's a really great cocktail. Opportunity to taste your
it
product.
It is. And I'd be honest. I mean, obviously, most people come in and say, oh, what's going on in the distillery? Do you make this? Do you make that? Yes, we have a cocktail menu. We use other products, too. But there are cocktails with our spirits in them. And if people are just there for a good time, great. Come on in and enjoy a drink. If you want to know more about what we're distilling and how we do it, it is certainly our pleasure to share that experience as well.
Yeah. So you actually brought something today.
I did. This is our newest product. It's, oh my goodness, it's sort of named after me, but more so my family, called Mr. Katz's Rockin' Rye, another bit of Americana, throwback to the saloon era of the mid-19th and late 19th century.
And you made that.
I did.
You just did. Bring it in.
Yeah. But this is really our first authentic product with rye whiskey in it.
So is it the first product that's not gin also?
Technically, yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
To expand on that, the Chief Gowanus we call New Netherland Gin, but in a way it's a whiskey gin hybrid.
Okay. Yeah.
But this is something people can relate to
for
truly
marketing purposes.
As a whiskey product, even though there's not a lot of rockin' rye in the contemporary lexicon of consumer drinking or on store shelves. This is something that, again, is rediscovering an American past.
So what's Rock and Rye?
It's very simple. It's rye whiskey that we made here in Brooklyn that is tempered with rock candy sugar, rock hence candy. Rock and rye.
Yeah. It's like that stuff when you're a kid, if you get on a stick.
The little,
like,
swizzle sticks.
The little swizzle sticks.
Correct.
Yeah, and they had all different colors of rock candy, and you could suck on it, and, like, if, well, you know, you did it enough, you could lose some teeth.
In the 19th century, there was not granulated sugar. Oh. It didn't come in little packets yet, and you would get sugar in one of two fashions. One was rock candy sugar, those nuggets, if you will, or as we've come to know them, on swizzle sticks. Or you would get a loaf of sugar that you would literally have to chisel a bit of, and you might put it in coffee or chicory, or you might use it in a cocktail, but you'd have to wet it, perhaps with a little bit of water, or what was also fashionable, seltzer water, or a couple dashes of bitters, and that would help it loosen up, and maybe you'd muddle it and start dissolving it so that it would sweeten the drink you were applying it to.
Mm-hmm. And so this is like an old school kind of drink.
It is.
And you told me when we talked another time that kind of the purpose was to sort of temper the taste of the rye, because it might not have been, you know, such high quality rye as you're making at New York Distillery.
Well, I mean, let me be perfectly honest. The idea of rock and rye, and including our rock and rye, is that we're using what we would consider to be otherwise younger rye whiskey. The rye whiskey in this bottle is about a year old, just under a year. And when we release straight rye whiskey in the near term, next year, 2015, it will be closer to 3 years in age. And so this younger rye whiskey, and rye being a spicier grain to begin with, is a little bit aggressive. And it's fun in that way, and people are becoming accustomed to those tastes, but we're trying to play with that aggressive nature and give it a little bit of balance. And so looking back to this historic style, we add the rock candy sugar, and we actually add some other flavors, some of which would be typical and some not. We add Bing cherries, dried Bing cherries, a little bit of dried orange peel, and a little bit of cinnamon as well. So in one style, it's a cocktail in and of itself that's already been bottled. And in another, you can mix it in drinks as well.
And in all of them, it tastes like Christmas.
Hey, I like Christmas.
Who doesn't?
Well, it's fun. I mean, part of it is that we've really just launched this this fall and winter, and it does have those soothing flavors.
I mean, like, when you taste it, you're literally going to want to snuggle it.
Yeah, and it's not it's not complicated. You know, you can drink it on its own. I would add an ice cube or two.
Just saying.
Very well. You may do whatever you like,
of course.
But I add a dash of bitters and an ice cube and a twist of orange or lemon, and that's it. You've got a drink that is interesting, complex, not hard to drink at all. And one of the unique natures of it is that Mr. Katz's Rock and Rye is bottled at 65 proof. So it's a lower proof than you typically find in a distilled spirit. So that with a couple of ice cubes, it's really a quite easy potion to drink.
I would agree.
And it's not going to knock you over either.
Unless you drink the whole bottle.
Unless you drink the whole bottle.
Which I would never do. So you actually know about this drink because it's something your grandfather used to drink.
That's correct,
right?
Yes.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, I didn't know my grandfather, but through stories from my dad, and my dad was raised in what I would call Little Hicktown in West Virginia. And it was right on the B&O Railroad. And my grandfather worked in his father's, my great-grandfather's store, which, you know, would in modern times be called a small department store. It was a multi-level building, not very large, that had a little men's department and a ladies' department and a shoe department. And I conjure these things up, though I don't have, they're not all factually based. I think of it as having a hat department, of course, must have that. And this was the style in not just the late 19th century, but early 20th century, that you would have encountered in towns like this. And they grew up in throwing distance to a whiskey distillery that was called the Hannesville Distillery. That was a major business of its era in the Potomac area, in eastern West Virginia and in Baltimore and Washington areas. And one of the things that they made was rye whiskey. And in part, you could take rye whiskey home and make your own rockin' rye. It's not hard to do. Make it in bulk. You want it to be consistent. That's important, obviously. But you could take whiskey and add a little bit of rock candy sugar or sugar or some other sweetener and say, oh, this is an interesting herb or this is an interesting fruit or some other context and see how it turns out. And that's what they would do. My grandfather at home would say, yeah, this is my afternoon's libation and have a little rock and rye.
So that's so sweet and awesome that you made a whole liquor or spirit, I guess, named after Mr. Katz is your grandfather.
That way, it's my grandfather, my father, and a little bit of me too, since it is my recipe.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, it's
fun. Pretty sweet. What's your favorite drink? Like, if you're not drinking your own spirits that sure. You made yourself, but you know, you
well,
settle
I often,
up to the bar.
I often qualified in this way. I have a deathbed cocktail.
Yes,
and that's a Manhattan.
Okay.
Simple and straight up, and my wife knows when the time comes, have it ready. Give me a good Manhattan.
Romantically morbid.
It is. I like it. give me one last thing on the way out, put a smile on my face, and that would be a Manhattan.
Good. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with the morning after quiz.
Touch me. It's so...
No spoilers. We're back. This is the morning after. That was Alan Katz singing. And I just informed him that he is about to take the morning after quiz, which is the hardest and most nonsensical least sensical quiz he will ever take his entire life. So Jesse is usually the one who gives the quiz, but in her stead, I will be furnishing it today. So as you know, if you're a regular listener, and you probably are, you know that the quiz is always kind of silly and based on something that has to do with the person's name or what they're involved in. So Alan Katz, your last name is Katz.
Yes,
which,
it is.
K-A-T-Z, which makes us think of everyone's favorite feline-based musical, Cats.
Oh, my goodness.
I bet you didn't see that coming.
I didn't.
Prepare for the quiz. And she also wrote, Meow.
Meow.
Which fits into, like, the wonderful cat cafe theme of today. So, there's three questions. They're multiple choice. No one has ever gotten all three right. I will say that.
Are there prizes?
Yes.
All right.
our love and eternal respect.
All right, I can take that too.
And you will always be mentioned as the person who won the quiz, if you win the quiz. Okay, so question one. Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical Cats debuted in the West End in 1981. Which famous actress was originally cast to play Grisabella, the cat who sings the song Memory, which you were just singing, so I think you know. So your options are A, Julie Andrews, B, Helen Mirren, C, the Dame Judi Dench.
Wow.
Yeah, I told you. It's not as easy as you think.
It's not as easy as I think.
Ever is.
Julie Andrews, Helen Mirren, Judi Dench. It's not Judi Dench. I'm going to say it was Helen Mirren.
That is a good guess.
It's Julie
sadly,
Andrews?
Sadly, it was the Dame Judi Dench.
No, my God, that's insane.
It is insane. And guess what? She snapped her Achilles tendon during rehearsal. And the role actually had to be recast weeks before opening night.
That is a good question.
Isn't that good? Good job, Jesse.
Good job.
Yeah. Okay, so you didn't win the whole quiz.
I did win.
But it's okay. Two more to go. Number two, based on T.S. Eliot's Old Possum Book of Practical Cats, which of these is not the name of a practical cat? A, Sir Swisher Paws. B, Rumpelteazer. C, Mungo Jerry.
Sir Swisher Teaser.
is not the name of a practical.
Is not the name of a practical cat.
That is correct.
All right.
Sir Swisher Paws is no kind of practical cat. That is an impractical cat. All right. Very well done. Number three, get excited. A revival of Cats will be running in London for a limited time this December. With what major change to the show? Is it A, a street cat hip hop number, B, the addition of real cats, or C, full body paint instead of their signature spandex costume?
Wow, well, I'm certainly hoping it's the latter, but let's see. Oh my goodness.
That's a really tough one.
I mean, the seemingly obvious answer is the street the addition of a new number.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'm going to guess a new number from Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber.
You're right. It is a street cat hip-hop number, but that just seems ridiculous.
This seems so bad.
It seems
misguided.
So bad. I think it would be better if they had real cats performing.
It is so
That
played.
Would probably be a better performance to watch real cats than a street cat hip-hop number.
I will not be buying a ticket.
No, to London. Or to see cats in London. Well, you did really well. You got 2 out of 3.
That's good enough for me today, I guess.
Can you just do a little singing again?
Oh my goodness! Really?
Yeah.
Touch me. It's so easy. Come on.
Let's That's go. Really good.
Next.
That's really, really good. That's wow. Thank you so much.
Here's
for that,
to Judi Dench. I'm sorry.
Here's to Dame
did
Judi
she
Dench.
Ever get to play a role at another time? Now that would be key if Judi Dench was in the new production.
Doing the hip hop number.
That too. That's taking it to another level.
I might go to London to see that. Well, Alan, thank you so much for playing along and for, you know, all of your wonderful knowledge. And you guys, just go. You got to go get this Rock and Rye. It's amazing. It's perfect for the holidays. Where can we get it?
It's available all over the city. That's
perfect.
For certain. And there's a few places that can legally mail order it outside the city as well.
Where's that?
Primarily Drink Up New York. They have a great legal setup with New York State to be able to ship outside of the state.
I saw it on Mouth.com.
Yeah, Mouth.com has it. Some great retailers. Back Label in Manhattan and Astor and Union Square, Zaki's in Westchester and BQE Liquors and some other places.
Awesome.
Here in Williamsburg.
What about finding out more about New York Distilling Company and the Shandy?
Check out our website, nydistilling.com, and we try to keep it refreshed and interesting.
Do you have any social media?
Oh,
Twitter,
sure.
Facebook?
I never heard of those, but we have them all. It's all nydistilling.com.
Okay.
Or nydistilling.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's
Cheers.
Truly a pleasure to chat with you. And stay tuned for next week. We'll be back with The Morning After.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.